Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, I want to give you the results of last Friday's poll. The question was, did you send out holiday cards in the mail this holiday season, yes or no? And overwhelmingly, the answer was no. Nearly 3-1 no's versus yes. And that means, of course, there were fewer mails cards in the post office and makes it harder for the post office to make some money. There's a new survey question up there on the site today. You can go to brainstormingonline.com. Take today's poll. The poll is very simple. Are you going to make a New Year's resolution in 2012? Yes or no? Go to brainstormingonline.com. Take today's poll. Are you going to make a New Year's resolution? Yes or no? I'll give you the results of today's poll tomorrow. As I said, every show has a theme, and today's theme is challenging stereotypes. Each of my guests will discuss her topic and explaining how it makes us question our stereotypes. My first guest is a failed Little League pitcher turned sports writer. She's written the definitive biography of two of baseball's most enigmatic players. We'll discuss her latest biography of Mickey Mantle titled The Last Boy. My second guest is a human potential trainer with a highly developed capacity to inspire and inform. She delivers an unusual New Year's message for 2012, don't bother making resolutions. We'll explore the top 10 New Year's resolutions that people make at this time of the year and explain why some of them are futile and others are just plain dumb. My third guest has been an entrepreneur and a successful business owner since the age of 19. As a professional speaker, she tackles topics every person can relate to. We'll discuss men are slobs, women are neat, and other gender lies that damage relationships. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Jane Levy is the author of the New York Times bestsellers The Last Boy and Sandy Koufax, A Lefty's Legacy, and the comic novel Squeeze Play, all three books about baseball. She was a staff writer at the Washington Post from 1979 to 1988, first in the sports section and then writing for the style section. Before joining the Washington Post, she was a staff writer at Women's Sports and Self Magazine. Jane has written for many publications, including the New York Times, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated, The Village Voice, and the New York Daily News. She grew up in Long Island, where she pitched briefly, and as she puts it, poorly, for the Blue Jays of the Roslyn Long Island League. As a child, she worshipped Mickey Mantle from her second floor ballroom at the Concourse Plaza Hotel, where her grandmother's synagogue held services on high holidays. Jane attended Barnard College and the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, where she wrote her master's essay, later published in the Village Voice, on Red Smith, the great sports columnist for the New York Times. She has two adult children, lives in Washington, D.C., and spends other parts of her year in Touro, Massachusetts. Joining us from the greater New York area. Hi, Jane. How are you today?
I'm great, Bill. How are you?
Well, I am terrific, and thank you for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Love to have thought leaders like yourself on the show. Just for those people who may not know Mickey Mantle's statistics, let me bore them for a minute. He had an 18-year Major League career for the New York Yankees. He was both an outfielder and then later in his career, first baseman. He won three American League MVP titles. He played in 20 All-Star games. Now, before some of you start to question my math, if he had an 18-year career, how could he have played in 20 All-Star games? You have to remember in 59 and in 60, there were two All-Star games in each of those years, and he played in both of them. He appeared in 12 World Series, winning seven of them. He holds the World Series records for home runs, RBIs, runs, all of the major offensive categories that you can imagine. He was also the career leader in walk-off home runs with a combined 13, 12 during the regular season and one during the postseason. A 298 hitter, 536 home runs, the list goes on and on and on. You approach writing the book about Mickey Mantle with some trepidation, though, on two different levels. First, so much has been written about the Mick that you didn't feel that there was much more that could be said. And then second, because of your professional relationship with Mickey Mantle, got off to sort of a rocky start. So let's start there. Tell us the story. Why did the professional relationship with Mickey Mantle get off to such a rocky start?
Well, in 1983, after he'd been banned from baseball by then Commissioner Bowie Kuhn for having committed the grievous sin of signing a contract with an Atlantic City hotel and casino, where he was doing very much exactly what Willie Mays was doing across the way at Bally. A press release came across my desk at the Washington Post saying, come to the hotel and spend a day with the Mick. Have a one-on-one, meaning an individual and private interview. Have a filet mignon, a hearts of palm salad. And what they were trying to do was rustle up attention for what was going to be Mickey's debut golf tournament on behalf of the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you mentioned, I grew up in the shadow of Yankee Stadium, worshiping Mickey from near and to some extent afar. My grandmother lived on Walton Avenue, and which was two blocks from home plate. In my childhood imagination, one very, very long foul ball from home plate. And Mickey was my guy. You know, growing up in New York in the 50s, you had to have a guy, and it was going to be Willie or Duke or the Mick. And in my worldview, it was the Mick. And so, you know, reporters are supposed to be these kind of jaded, ornery, cynical folks. I don't really always find that to be true, and particularly when interviewing your own hero. It's one thing to interview other people. You come to your own and, you know, it's a big deal. So I got to Atlantic City, and mind you, the Claridge Hotel was where my parents had celebrated their one-night honeymoon. On Christmas night, as a matter of fact, 1941, the only night they could get a rabbi in the city of New York prior to my father shipping out to serve in World War II.
Wow.
And so going to this hotel was fraught, no matter what. It had emotional overload, let's say. And Mickey didn't show up on time for the interview, and I sat in this glass-enclosed restaurant that was kind of the size of an airport hangar because it was built to accommodate all the day trippers who came down on buses to gamble, you know, their coins away on the one-armed bandits. And by the time he showed up, hours late, I had memorized all the questions I wanted to ask in my notebook, and I was sweating. And he comes up next to me at this trough of buffet food, which by that point, the eggs had returned to their original powdered state, and the sausage links were oozing substances we don't want to even discuss. And his eyes were as bloodshot as the red infrared lights that were keeping these things warm. And he stuck out his hand. He says, "Hi, Mick." And I had that great drawl, and I said, in a very small voice, unbecoming a professional reporter, "Hi, I'm nervous." Now, you have to tell me, Bill, whether I'm allowed to say what he replied.
No, you're not. This is a PG-rated show, so we'll just let it go. He was known for his profanity, though.
Well, it wasn't really profane. What he said was, why? Were you scared I was going to pull on? And then he named an anatomical part that nobody wants pulled on, particularly in public, by your hero. And it was not literally profane in the linguistic sense. But it was such a verbally assaulting kind of reply that I recoiled. Now, Mickey did that to people in all sorts of ways. He liked to get them off balance. it was a way in which he, I think, probably unconsciously, sought to have control and power over situations in which he felt nervous and ill-equipped. And so immediately I was on the defensive, and, you know, I was 32 years old, so I wasn't exactly a baby. But in that instant, Bill, my childhood ended. It was as if Mickey Mantle had forced me with that one sentence to grow up. Now, at age 32, you could say it was about time. But nonetheless, all the illusions that I carry, that we all carry in a way, about our made-for-TV heroes, made-for-prime-time heroes, were shorn in an instant. And what he did is he forced me to grow up and see the world and to see him as he was, not as I wanted him to be. And, you know, I spent 48 hours with him, give or take, you know, which ended with him, well, I guess it didn't end, but it included him passing out dead drunk in my lap at 2 in the morning. And I then got very angry at him the next morning, which, of course, is a reportorial sin. You know, you're not supposed to insult the people you have to get information from. I was taking a real risk by telling him exactly what I thought of his boorish behavior. But what I discovered, and his sons corroborated this, his two surviving sons, Danny and David, he wanted people to tell him, knock it off. It was as if his entire adult life, particularly the part after he retired in 68, was a dare. Somebody tell me I can't do this. Because nobody tells these guys, you can't swear, you can't insult people, you can't get publicly drunk and expect people to look the other way, because they live by a different set of rules, and we allow them to do it. And his son said to me, you know, he really wanted to be held accountable, and he might well have been better off had he been.
My guest is Jane Levy, author of the book, The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle and the End of America's Childhood. So, in a way, when Mickey forced you to become an adult, how much did that incident influence the tone of your book when you write The End of America's Childhood?
Well, you know, that episode that probably, you know, got me to think of that subtitle more than anything else is the famous birthday party for Billy Martin that took place in May 57 at the Copacabana, which ended in what the New York Tabs called Yanks in Copa brawl, you know, big headlines. When we think about the difference between how innocent, in retrospect, that seemed, you know, some guy got knocked unconscious in a cloakroom or a bathroom, you know, compare that to, you know, a football player, NFL football player taking a gun into a club and shooting himself in the thigh. It's a, you know, a world of difference in seriousness. But in 1957, for that to become public was such a breach of the seawall that protected these guys from public scrutiny, because reporters weren't allowed to write what they knew. It was all see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Even when they heard and knew what those evils were. And I would invite you to consider the following. If Mickey Mantle and the Yankees celebrating Billy Martin's birthday were in the Copacabana or whatever the equivalent would be today, and everybody had smartphones with cameras in them, what are the chances that the Yankees could have spent the rest of the, you know, their lives, and Yogi and Whitey are the only two, I think, left alive who can tell what really happened there, being able to say, nobody did nothing to nobody, which was Yogi's fabulous line. Well, somebody did something to somebody, you know, whether it was one of the Yankees, whether it was the bouncers of the club and one of the Yankees, you know, we're likely never to know, because there's a clubhouse omerta, and they ain't telling. But if Mickey Mantle knew that there was a chance that somebody with a cell phone was going to post that video, you know, those images, 10 seconds later, do you think it would have been a chastening thought? In a funny way, I think he would have been better off, just as And I'm not sure that Michael Phelps's agent or mother or coach would agree with this. But, you know, that guy, the great Olympic swimmer, was photographed inhaling on a bong at a school party, and it went viral. And it didn't do much for his image, but it might have helped him to realize he better straighten up and fly right. And so in a funny way, today's technology can be the check and balance that we as, you know, fans don't tend to bring in our heart of hearts to these guys.
All right. My guest is Jane Levy, author of the book The Lost Boy, and I'm going to challenge you on that, Jane, just a little bit, because I think that the nature of heroism has changed between the 1950s and today, and I'm not so sure that if Mickey Mantle had been held accountable, if he would have been a different person. Nobody can tell. That would be speculation on everybody's part. But the fact that we don't idolize our heroes the way we did in the 50s is partly the reason why you would see something like Michael Phelps is hitting on a bong posted on the internet, or if there had been a brawl among Major League Baseball players, that too would have been posted onto the internet. We just don't revere our idols, baseball or any other type of idol, the same way that we did in the 50s.
I would argue and challenge you on that. I don't think the nature of heroism and how we think of these exalted souls and how later, you know, we're happy to participate in the defrocking of them has changed since Greek mythology. I think there is still in our heart of hearts a human tendency to believe that these people who are capable of supernatural physical feats, who can throw a spiral downfield, you know, 70 yards, who can hit a ball out of Griffith Stadium over 32 rows of concrete bleachers and into a neighborhood, as Mickey Mantle did in April of 53, that there are some supernatural human characteristics and strengths, internal ones, I mean, that go along with those external manifestations. And where it breaks down is when we learn that just because you can throw that pass or hit that ball doesn't mean you're also, you know, the most righteous or the most psychologically intact human being. And that's where, you know, and that's the disjunction. And we still go through that. Look at Tiger Woods. You know, I mean, it's the same story writ in 2000 and, you know, in the 21st century. The difference with Tiger is that he was so wealthy he could buy the protection that the press no longer affords. He had a posse of guys would make sure that nobody knew. But where the similarity is with Mantle is that when people depend on their livelihood on protecting these quote-unquote gods, they get co-opted too. I mean, Mantle's teammates knew how alcoholism was affecting him and how progressed it had become in his, you know, after playing years. But, you know, he was responsible for taking them along on the gravy train, the memorabilia gravy train. So who had a vested interest in calling him out and saying, hey, Mick, you can't go drinking? Well, going drinking and going to cocktail parties, as Mickey always said, you know, playing golf and going to cocktail parties, that's my job. Well, if you stop doing the cocktail party part of it, he probably wouldn't have been able to do the other part of it, or he certainly believed he couldn't. So nobody had a vested interest in having that stop.
He did. My guest has been Jane Levy, author of the book The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle and the End of America's Childhood. Jane, it's a fascinating subject. It is a very in-depth look at the man, Mickey Mantle. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Well, you know, Bill, I always hate the way this sounds, but it's janelevy.com.
Janelevy.com.
You know those Jane Levy at me.com things that you just want to go me. But I'm happy to hear from readers. I try to answer every question if they have one. I do get them all personally, and if anybody has a great idea for a next book, I'm all ears.
Well, that's good to know. That's Jane Levy, LEAVY.com. Jane, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
You bet. Thanks so much.